Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on the challenges the U.S. Army is facing in finding young Americans who are in good enough physical condition to serve.
The same issues and the way they're impacting America's overall quality of life, competitiveness in a global economy, and other things.
Then, we report on a debate within the Army about possibly letting some soldiers who fight wars on computers to be heavier than soldiers who are fighting on the battlefield. As we will hear, not everyone supports such a change. The U.S. Army's recruiting challenges and possible changes to weight standards for the Army's new cyber warriors. Those are our stories today on As It Is. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a daily podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have ended, and Congress has ordered the military to reduce troop levels. But the United States Army and other military services must continue to recruit new soldiers, and it is having trouble finding enough people who are qualified. The Army tells VOA changes in society have decreased the number of young people who are eligible to join. The U.S. Army plans to reduce its size from 508,000 soldiers to 450,000 by the year 2017. Most new soldiers leave the service after their first enlistment period of 3 or 4 years has ended. So the Army must still recruit between 70,000 and 90,000 young Americans every year to reach its target troop level. People who want to join the Army must be in good physical and mental condition. They must be between the ages of 17 and 34. They must have graduated from high school. They must not have used illegal drugs or have a criminal record. And they may have only small tattoos and none on their hands, face, neck, or head. The Department of Defense says 71% of young Americans between the ages of 17 and 24 would not be accepted into one of the nation's military services if they volunteered. The Army believes that number will increase to 80% by 2020, mostly because of the expected rise in obesity levels. The Army says about 28% of people who apply are rejected because they are overweight or have behavior problems. Others are not permitted to join because they have a criminal record or a history of drug abuse. Some are rejected because they are unable to meet the military's academic requirements. One quarter of the high school graduates who take the Army's math and reading test fail it. Major General Alan Bachelet is the commander of the U.S. Army's Recruiting Command. He spoke to the public radio program Here and Now in August about the Army's recruiting difficulties. He says the main problem is young Americans' poor physical fitness.
The factors that we use to measure and evaluate people to join the Army, increasingly, they're not able to meet those requirements. And it's very troubling, and the trends are not in a good direction, especially in regards to fitness. Young people are showing up at our doors increasingly unfit or obese, and it's a real problem.
The U.S. Army reflects the nature of the country's youth, and many young Americans are simply too fat to fight. General Bachelet says he is worried the Army will soon be unable to reach its recruiting goals. He says the country's current social trends may be creating a serious national security problem. You are listening to As It Is on The Voice of America. The U.S. Army needs cyber warriors to defend against attacks on the nation's computer systems. But it is having a hard time finding young Americans who meet all of the requirements for the job. Cyber warrior candidates must have advanced computer skills, want to join the service, and meet the Army's current physical fitness standards. So the Army is studying whether it should have different height and weight standards for soldiers depending on what job they will do. The possible change could permit cyber warriors, soldiers who fight the enemy in cyberspace, to have more body fat than soldiers who fight on the battlefield. Now, all soldiers must meet the same physical standards, whether they are cooks, clerks, or infantrymen. To remain in the Army, male soldiers between the ages of 17 and 21 must be able to do 35 push-ups and 47 sit-ups. They must also run 2 miles in fewer than 17 minutes. Female soldiers of the same age must reach similar timed targets for push-ups, sit-ups, and a 2-mile run. Major General Alan Bachelet leads the U.S. Army Recruiting Command. The Florida Times Union newspaper reported his comments about possible changes to the Army's standards for some new soldiers. The newspaper said General Bachelet believes people who are fighting a war in cyberspace may not need to meet the same physical standards as infantrymen. They must still be physically fit, healthy, and have a professional appearance, however. But many young Americans are obese and do not exercise much. Many of them are likely to struggle or fail to pass the Army's physical fitness test without training. General Bachelet did not say how the test might be changed to permit those who cannot pass it, but who have the computer skills the Army needs, to join the military. Beth Ash is a senior economist at the RAND Corporation, a research group. She studies military recruiting activities. She told VOA that new missions have always forced the Army to study different recruiting methods.
A few years ago, this issue came up in the context of language capability, that people who had language capability wouldn't necessarily meet other requirements. And the issue there was that people who have language capabilities in the languages we really needed weren't necessarily U.S. citizens or would have passed security clearance-related issues. So these are smaller-scale programs that were very targeted to a specific need, and the idea was these people would help meet that need.
The Army told VOA that officials have only talked about possible policy changes. They have not made a decision about changing standards for possible new cyber warriors. A spokesman said, "The Army works in deliberate, careful ways on issues like this, so we don't believe a change will be made soon. That's our program for today. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Broadband internet service can be costly. Some countries do not have the high-speed internet because of the cost involved. But Microsoft Corporation and other companies have found a way to bring low-cost, high-speed internet service to Ghana. They are turning to some very high and ultra-high frequency bands to do so. These bands are set aside for aircraft, television broadcast, and other communications. But the frequencies have yet to be used and are sometimes called white spaces. Sean Seeley is Chief Executive Officer of Spectralink Wireless. His company and Microsoft are partners. He says their program provides students in rural Ghana with internet service within 5 kilometers away from the university. The students get 10 to 20 times more than what they would get through mobile operators at the same price, he says. Mr. Seeley adds that some students might be buying 20 megabytes of data for about 30 U.S. cents, but the program provides one day of unlimited data for about 60 cents. The program combines Wi-Fi wireless technology with white space to provide internet access to Ghana. Recently, the program became the first of its kind to commercialize this kind of network or system. Sean Seeley says television white spaces can be thought of as super Wi-Fi. They can reach further than normal Wi-Fi and are less costly. Both Microsoft and Spectralink Wireless worked with Ghanaian officials to get use of the unused television frequencies. Frank McCosker directs the program for Microsoft. He says the program is part of the company's $75 million For Africa initiative. Mr. McCosker says he wants the program to accelerate some certain actions within Africa. The actions include investing in new businesses and new technologies. They also include training and partnerships with businesses in a number of countries, including Tanzania, South Africa, Kenya, and Namibia. Mr. McCosker says the program works to find different ways to make internet service more affordable. He says they are working to provide internet connectivity in parts of countries which are not connected at all. Mr. Seeley says he expects internet service costs to drop in the area as white space connectivity becomes more available. Spectralink Wireless now plans to take white space internet access to Nigeria, Ivory Coast, and Cameroon. Mr. Seeley says Spectralink Wireless has worked on this technology for the past 3 years. They partnered with Microsoft over a year ago. Mr. Seeley says the companies have achieved something that is unique, and we hope that we will grow it massively in the next few years, so everybody can get affordable access to broadcast internet, which will change lives. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thank you.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In our last program, we told you the story of the Statue of Liberty. It was given to the United States by the people of France. Lady Liberty holds a bright torch high over the harbor of New York City. Millions of immigrants coming to America passed the statue as ships carried them to the Immigration Processing Center on Ellis Island. This week in our series, Leo Scully and Morris Joyce tell the story of immigration in the United States during the 1800s.
American life was changing, and it was changing quickly. Before 1860, the United States had an agricultural economy. After 1860, the country began to change from an agricultural to an industrial economy. In 1860, American shops and factories produced less than $2,000 million worth of goods. 30 years later, in 1890, American factories produced $10,000 million worth. By then, more than 5 million persons were working in factories and mines. Another 3 million had jobs in the building industries and transportation.
Year after year, production continued to increase, and the size of the industrial labor force continued to grow. A great many of the new industrial workers came from American farms. Farm work was hard, and the pay was low. Young men left the family farms as soon as they could. They went to towns and cities to look for an easier and better way of life. Many of them found it in the factories. A young man who worked hard and learned new skills could rise quickly to better and better jobs. This was not only true for farmers, but also for immigrants who came to the United States from foreign countries. They came from many different lands and for many different reasons, but all came with the same hope for a better life in a new world.
In the 1850s, America's Industrial Revolution was just beginning. Factories needed skilled workers, men who knew how to do all the necessary jobs. Factory owners offered high pay to workers who had these skills. British workers had them. Many had spent years in British factories. Pay was poor in Britain, and these skilled workers could get much more money in America. So many of them came, hundreds of thousands. Some factories, even some industries, seemed completely British.
Cloth factories in Falls River, Massachusetts, were filled with young men from Lancashire, England. Most of the workers in the shipyards of San Francisco were from Scotland. Many of the coal miners in America were men from the British mines in Wales. Many were farmers who came to America because they could get land for nothing. They could build new farms for themselves in the rich land of the American West.
One of the best-liked songs in Britain then was a song about the better life in America. Its name, To the West. Its words helped many men decide to make the move to America. To the West, to the land of the free, where mighty Missouri rolls down to the sea. Where a man is a man if he's willing to toil, and the poorest may harvest the fruits of the soil. Where the young may exult and the aged may rest. Away, far away, to the land of the West.
To another group of immigrants, America was the last hope. Ireland in the 1840s suffered one crop failure after another. Hungry men had to leave. In 1850 alone, more than 117,000 people came to the United States from Ireland. Most had no money and little education. To those men and women, America was a magic name.
Throughout Europe, when times were hard, people talked of going to America. In some countries, organizations were formed to help people emigrate to the United States. A Polish farmer wrote to such an organization in Warsaw. I want to go to America, but I have no money. I have nothing but the 10 fingers of my hands, a wife, and 9 children. I have no work at all, although I am strong and healthy and only 45 years old. I have been to many towns and cities in Poland, wherever I could go. Nowhere could I earn much money. I wish to work, but what can I do? I will not steal, and I have no work. So I beg you to accept me for a journey to America.
As the years passed, fewer people were moving to America for a better job. Most were coming now for any job at all. Work was hard to find in any of the cities in Europe. A British lawmaker told Parliament in 1870 that Englishmen were leaving their country not because they wanted to, but because they had to. They could not find work at home. He said that even as he spoke, hundreds were dying of hunger in London and other British cities. They were victims of the new revolution in agriculture and industry. Small family farms were disappearing. In their places rose large, modern farms that could produce much more. New machines took the place of men, and millions of farmers had to look for other work. Some found it in the factories. Industry was growing quickly, but not quickly enough to give jobs to all the farmers out of work.
In the next 10 years, millions of people made the move from Britain, Germany, and the Scandinavian countries. But then, as industry in those countries grew larger and more jobs opened, the flood of immigration began to slow. The immigrants now were coming from southern and eastern Europe. Anti-Jewish feeling swept Russia and Poland. Violence against Jews caused many of them to move to America. In the late 1880s, cholera spread through much of southern Italy. Fear of the disease led many families to leave for the United States. Others left when their governments began building up strong armies. Young men who did not want to be soldiers often escaped by moving to America. Big armies were costly, and many people left because they did not want to pay the high taxes. Whatever the reason, people continued to immigrate to the United States.
These new immigrants were not like those who came earlier. These new immigrants had no skills. Most were unable to read or write. Factory owners found that these Eastern and Southern Europeans were hard workers. They did not protest because the work was hard and the pay was low. They did not demand better working conditions. They did not join unions or strike. Factory owners began to replace higher-paid American and British workers with the new immigrants. Business leaders wanted more of the new workers. They urged the immigrants to write letters to their friends and relatives in the old country. Tell them to come to America, that there are plenty of jobs.
Letters from America brought many more immigrants. The big steamship companies also helped industry to get more of the new workers. They paid thousands of agents throughout Europe to sell tickets for the trip to America. Their efforts meant that steamships bringing grain to Europe could return to America filled with immigrants. They came by the hundreds of thousands, people of all religions from all across Europe. Many remained in New York and other eastern cities, but many others moved westward. They took jobs in the steel factories of Pennsylvania and the coal mines of West Virginia. They worked in the lumber camps of Michigan and in the stockyards and meat packing plants of Chicago.
Within a few years, foreign-born workers held most of the unskilled jobs in many American industries. American workers began to protest. They demanded an end to the flood of immigration. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Leo Scully and Morris Joyce. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English. Thank you.